are listening to the Quarter to Three Movie Edition podcast. My name is Tom Chick. I'm here to get you a cup of coffee if you want one. The first gentleman you heard, giggling, that would be Christian Murkowski. How do you pronounce that?
Oh, good lord.
Chick.
We'll just call you Dingus.
Chick. It's pronounced Chick.
So that's Dingus, ladies and gentlemen. The second person you heard giggling, but more quietly, that's Kelly Wand. Kelly.
Yeah, guys, I can't do this too long because my grandma just fell over in the kitchen and broke her hip.
That's good. You can help her in a little bit, but talk to us about movies for a little bit.
So that's from a famous movie. You have to name the movie, and then the winner gets a DVD copy of it.
Is it a vacation movie? Is Chevy Chase in it?
No. Actually, it's a student film that I didn't actually make.
So something that nobody would get. Okay.
But once it's done, I'll have it on DVD, and then I can present it.
It's a terrible idea for a contest. So, by the way,
hey,
Kelly Wand, I just want to point out, this might be news to people, you're not a chick, it sounds like.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That probably is embarrassing. You probably get that a lot, like on phone calls, like people call you sir or whatnot. Yeah.
No. I've been meaning to tell you that you've got it wrong.
Okay, good, because I'd always thought, you know, Kelly Wand, that's like a chick's name. You have a sort of feminine way of writing, I think. There's charm to that, and I just would have been alarmed if you were a dude. So let's talk about movies.
Your alarm is well placed, Tom.
Thank you.
I have a question about the music.
Yes,
is that
yes,
special
yes.
Halloween scary music that faded into the house music? Drums? Or was that the general theme for every episode? Not that there'll be more than one.
I think that one was specifically for this episode. It's a Radiohead track. It does kind of, it sounds haunted housey, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't follow sports.
They're not making any more albums, by the way.
That's what I hear, yeah.
Is Sammy Hagar? Nothing. Go on.
But it's haunted housey because of, I think, what movie we should talk about today, which we've all seen. So here's the deal for our new listeners, and that at this point is all of our listeners because we've never done this before. All of our listeners are new listeners. So for everyone out there, here's what we want to do. We're just three guys who like watching movies a lot, and we're just going to talk about them. But we want to warn you, some of us are really uptight about spoilers, and we respect people who are the same way. So if you have not yet seen Paranormal Activity, bail. Don't, you know, this is not, this is a podcast only for people who have seen Paranormal Activity or who don't mind it being spoiled. In the process, we might spoil other movies. We won't be too gratuitous about that. But just warning you, we're going to talk about Paranormal Activity with the assumption that you have seen it. So now's your chance. We'll give you a moment to you know, reach the off button or whatnot. Stop listening if you have not seen Paranormal Activity.
Now, that was completely pointless because anyone who listens to a podcast about a movie without having seen it obviously isn't going to see the movie. So, or they're really stupid.
I would agree, but there's weird people out there.
No, a podcast? I mean, even just a thread's dangerous enough. But a podcast, anything goes in a podcast.
Well, we want to protect people from themselves. So I wanted to avoid lawsuits, too. So I'm just putting that out there. Now, Dingus...
What if they skipped ahead? Okay, never mind.
Well, that's their own fault. If you're going to go dancing around the podcast, you get what you deserve.
All right.
So now, Dingus, you are probably the most uptight amongst us about spoilers. So you have volunteered... You're willing to sacrifice something tonight. What is that?
I'm willing to say that even though I have not seen a film, I think it's a film, it might be a documentary, called The Blair Witch Project, I'm willing to let you guys talk about that even though I haven't seen about that.
Okay. And now here's where we react with surprise and we say, you haven't seen Blair Witch Project? So, Kelly, let's you and I.
Blair Witch Project?
Why haven't you seen that? Please.
I was acting in a version of Rocky Horror Picture Show at the time, and so I couldn't see it.
What's that got to do with it?
Yeah.
Nothing.
That makes no sense. That's a total, like, if I said that, I'd be in trouble right now.
You're in trouble anyway.
Yeah, we heard the bong.
I equate the two of those because those are two things that I feel like the horse has left the barn on. In other words, that I've never seen Rocky Horror Picture Show in a theater, and I think that watching it on video would be pointless. And I thought that the idea of Blair Witch Project is that you go to the theater thinking it's a real thing, and once you know that it's a movie, renting it is sort of pointless.
Now, have any of your friends, like maybe any of them on this podcast, tried to disabuse you of that notion?
One of them has.
Okay. Because that friend you should listen to. Blair Witch Project, I think, holds up. Now, why are we talking about Blair Witch Project? What does that have to do with Paranormal Activity?
I have no idea, but I know you want to talk about it.
There's at least one scene that's a carbon copy of a scene in Blair Witch Project.
What? Which one?
The part where the picture on the wall gets smashed and he goes, why is it just my face? Isn't that just like the dude in Blair Witch Project going, oh, how come I got the... How come all my stuff's got slime in it? It's the exact same thing.
Mm. That's from Ghostbusters.
There's some continuity there. I can see. I'm not buying that, Kelly. I was gonna just let you get by with
what?
That.
What?
They're just
that's
sort
exactly
of,
the same.
Similar. I thought.
Put it
I thought you were saying it was like a direct homage to Blair Witch Project. I think it just follows naturally from what's happening in the movie. It's similar to Blair Witch Project. But I wouldn't. So the better point of
I'm a little.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry.
No, well, I was just going to say, you know, there's a lot of continuity between Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity in that they're both, and Dingus, you had asked me about the phrase for this, they're both found footage movies.
Yeah.
Is that official? Because I was looking for a mumblecore kind of a term. Is it?
Okay,
is that something you just made up?
No, that's true.
Okay, hold on. I just got to write
Cloverfield.
I got to make a note of this, you guys. Hold on. 7 minutes, 30 seconds before Dingus makes an inside joke that no one else. Okay, there.
I didn't get the Rocky Horror one either.
Well, we were talking about mumblecore is a legitimate genre. Kelly, have you heard of mumblecore?
No.
Oh.
I've heard of Mumbly Peg.
It's not like that. Like mumblecore is like movies that don't have a script where the actors sort of under talk and they're not very well mic'd, like Gus Van Sant stuff, maybe certain Dogma things. So found footage is this idea of Blair Witch Project, Cloverfield, Paranormal Activity. I'm sure there are others. Maybe Man Bites Dog, that serial killer movie. Diary of the Dead, by the way. Kelly, did you see that George Romero thing? Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I hated Romero. But Open Water wouldn't qualify because there's a cameraman shooting them the whole time.
Right.
Open Water.
Why doesn't he ever help them?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It should be found video.
Now, Kelly, the thing you told me about Paranormal Activity before I'd seen it was that you thought it was the new Open Water?
It was the new Open Water. It was our Open Water, this generation's Open Water. Because Open Water was like 3 years ago, which in Hollywood terms is generations. But I was saying, dumbly, and I forget my point now, but it was something like, in Open Water, the dude swats a bug on his hotel room.
Oh, you're going to try this. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, this is good shit. It was
way too convoluted. It doesn't really work. We could try it. Give it a shot. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut. Here's this awesome observation from Kelly Wan. I want you to run with it because I want to see if other people like it.
All right. I don't even consider this convoluted, and I am capable of massive just OCD convolutions, but this one's easy.
Okay.
The guy swats the bug in Open Water.
Nobody remembers that.
Represents.
Right?
I do. That's true. I don't think anyone's going to remember. I know I stand alone on that.
It wasn't a bug. It was a shark. What the fuck are you talking about?
And then the camera swats him. No way, you screwed me up.
So you have a point. So Kelly, it's got the scene. They obviously included it in the final cut for a reason. They show him swatting the bug.
Right, it's a harbinger. Yeah, it's a foreshadowing of how he's going to be like the bug because he is like an animal that strayed unknowingly into this other more powerful animal's natural environment.
Okay.
Like the shark. And then in, what are we talking about? Paranormal Activity.
Right.
He takes the spider out of the bathroom, and he's going to be the spider because the bathroom is the supernatural world that man was doesn't know he's in and isn't really that powerful in, and he's impotent against the demons.
All right, Dingus, did you follow that, Dingus? You're going to have to be the judge here. Did that work for you?
No, I'm focused on the fact that he saved the spider.
Yeah, I thought that. Yeah, that's true. Which separates man from demons, and that's the point of that scene. Thank you. By the way, Tom, I have a question for you because you're a theology major and you know this stupid shit. But doesn't paranormal refer to ghosts specifically, and then demons are supernatural? So isn't the title a misnomer?
I was not aware of that. I studied theology and not the occult necessarily. If it had to do with like the Hebrew cognate for certain words, I might be able to address that. But
there was no demonology in your theology.
There was not. No
studies. Really? Oh, I thought they were the same. I thought that'd be the fun part of studying.
I was an Old Testament dude. There's not a lot of that stuff in the Old Testament. You know, that's all that medieval Christian.
No, don't the demons go into the pigs?
That's the New Testament. That's Jesus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Sorry, I get them mixed up.
Well, the thing is, we just accept that it's a demon. We just accept because somebody says the word demon and then everybody starts using that word that's what it is.
Well, they do a good job of creating, I think, of making it clear that there's a whole separate mythology here from a ghost story. And I really enjoyed that.
Right.
And that added a lot, you know, because a human being, you know, a dead human being, there's still something you can kind of relate to. And you also get a visual image of a ghost was once a person, so that's a person. But the way that they make it very clear early on, hey, this isn't a person. This isn't anything that you have any frame of reference for. This is from some other place we don't even understand. I love that aspect of the movie.
Like Mothman.
What do you mean by they?
The filmmaker.
Like, one guy. He means him. Well, the actors. The actors contributed a lot, though. They're really good. It was like the best acting in any found video movie by far, I thought.
Well, really, do you think that? Okay,
certainly, I agree with that, yeah.
Well, now, wait.
And
well,
the best,
hold on, Christian.
And the best camera work.
Your frame of reference, Christian, is Cloverfield, basically. This and Cloverfield. One of the things that I might put forth, I'm not sure how far I would go with this, but I think ultimately Blair Witch Project might be a better movie because of Heather Donahue, the lead actress in it. And that's another reason, too, that I think Blair Witch Project, it still holds up. You can still watch it partly because of her performance. She's excellent in that movie. And she gives it – they were very good in Paranormal Activity, but I think I liked her better. And for that, that's one of the main reasons that I really think Blair Witch Project holds up. You disagree, Kelly Wand.
Yeah, because Katie Featherston in Paranormal Activity has to show more range, and she has to get possessed. And so Heather Donahue
please.
Was just panicky the whole
movie. Oh, being possessed, anybody can do that.
She has to do a Megan Fox. Are you challenging the acting chops of Megan Fox, Tom? Is that what you're saying?
First of all, so Katie Featherston, that was the character's name. What's the actress's name?
That's her name.
No, right. What's the name of the actress, though?
No, we already found out that the actors are named after the characters or right. whatever, vice versa.
Wow, that must have made the casting a lot easier for them.
Yeah, all they had to do was find those people. Well, actually, what I was responding to when Kelly said that this is the best acting of any found footage, whatever this genre is called. I was actually extrapolating from that to indie films that I've seen in places like Sundance and whatnot, that you've seen so much painful amateur acting that in this particular film, this acting was beyond, I hate to say this, was beyond tolerable. It was really good for this low budget of film.
Yes.
And I'm not just talking about found footage kind of movies, but anything like this. So I was very comfortable with it.
I
was comfortable with it, Tom.
I was comfortable with it as well. I'm just trying to sort of defend that this doesn't really for me displace Blair Witch Project. I still have a very fond regard for Blair Witch Project, and I'm trying to say that I liked Blair Witch Project better, and I don't know how long I can hold out with that. So you can keep
holding forth on that, but
okay.
But what we were originally sort of talking about was why I'm going to sort of steer us back. I was trying to trying to get across the point that we're all accepting that it's a demon. And I think we're accepting that because of the first professor or the first guy who comes in and says it's a demon, and then we just accept that for the rest of the movie.
Well, yeah,
well, we don't get any other options.
That's true.
But we also don't know what a demon is. I mean, they don't really say, as far as we know, it's just some spectral creature that can possess you and do stuff.
There is the sort of the Jaws scene where the guy's doing research flipping through the book and you see various pictures of demons, which is like Roy Scheider reading all the shark books in Jaws. So they do that.
Right, but that's, right, Tom, but that's just Mika layering in what the doctor has already told him, and again, right, reinforcing for us, well, that's a demon, so we're just going to accept that.
Well, but also another thing, Dingus, that they
aliens don't use Ouija boards. Only demons use Ouija boards.
And then furthermore, the demon has been with her since she was a little girl, and one of the things the doctor says is that ghosts don't do that. There's that whole idea, too, and that's a very clever way to get around. You know, the audience is going, just leave the house. You know, in Poltergeist, they get away by just driving to a motel. Actually, they don't, though. But that's a clever way to make sure that it's a single set.
Vindicate Poltergeist 2. How dare you? They totally got away. They got sucked into the vortex. I was going to say that I think Blair Witch is more original and more of a landmark film. And I love Blair Witch. I'm a huge Blair Witch apologist. I think people are kind of burned out on it now. And if you see it now, since you know what's happening, it's lost some of its surprise value. But when you saw it at the time, it was really exciting, maybe. Right. But Paranormal Activity was scarier to me.
Yeah, and here's – that's the first question I had, is that why is Paranormal Activity – what makes this different from or scarier than other
horror? Because it taps into our
horror
fears. It taps into our fears of San Diego.
that's one option. Yes, I think you could go with that. I think there are other things. I don't know about you guys, but I live alone in a house, and I've been kind of like leaving the lights on in rooms like down the hall.
Now, did you do that after Blair Witch?
I did not. I just didn't go camping. And since I don't go camping that wasn't
a
problem.
That's why Blair Witch isn't – this is why Blair Witch isn't as scary and open water is not as scary. It's in open water, you go, well, I'll just stay on land.
Right, exactly. Blair Witch, you're
in
like –
Blair Witch, you go, I don't – yeah, you go, I'm not going to – all right, I don't go in the woods. But like Paranormal Activity is just
– what are you going to say? I'm not going to go to bed. I'm not going to – I'm going to sleep on the couch during the day. No, you can't
really – I'm just not going to sleep with my wife. I mean, clearly she's the problem.
Ah, good point. So, yeah, Dingus, you're the only one of us who's married. Did you, grill your wife about, hey, have you been haunted by any demonic presences since you were a little girl? Like, does that give you concern when you are at home?
It might have given me concern, and I might have left with that sort of feeling of dread and perpetual feeling of I've got to really suss this out, if not for the last couple of shots of the film, which ruined it. But up until that point, if I had left the movie 2 minutes before the end, then, yeah, I would be creeped out by my wife.
I think you're safe, though, because she would probably have told you by now. How long have you been married? Like 18, 19 years?
How long? Does she work out?
She wears,
you know,
really.
What I mean.
Yeah, I think you know. Yeah.
Been on an update.
I've been. This movie has, and the reason I wonder, you know, what makes it scarier, what makes it different than other horror movies, is I really don't think I have, since I've been a child, been freaked out by a movie like I was this. Now I watched it, and Dingus, you and I saw it together, and it was exhausting. I had a stomachache afterwards that might have been from the fact that, instead of getting dinner, I had a cup of coffee and then watched the movie, and it was just grueling. And that's fine. I've seen other movies like that. But I was really – I've been, like, freaked out the last couple of nights, and not – you know, I've been functional. But, you know, I've been – the movie's sort of been gnawing at my head in a way that other horror movies don't. And now I have a few theories for why that is. I don't – like, not the San Diego thing that you present, Kelly. That's a good guess. But I think it really does tap into a very common, a universal fear. You know, when
something's
we're
watching you while you sleep.
Exactly.
That's a big part.
And
You're completely vulnerable. Yeah. You're completely vulnerable when you're unconscious. And that's why the movie was so effective while I was watching it, and why I'm surprised it's not effective after the fact, as much. I'm not lying awake at night and worried about that, but during the movie I was thinking every time we click over to the day whatever, where we're showing the nighttime vision, every time I see that, I projected forward to the next time I go to sleep.
Right.
And now you weren't thinking about that when you were like laying in bed trying to fall asleep. That didn't occur to you?
No, for whatever reason it did not, but the anticipation of that dread affected me while I was watching it. So it wasn't just that this is – I'm frightened watching this right now. I was anticipating the idea of going to bed the next time. It doesn't bother me now, but I could remember vividly thinking as I sat there and the next title card came up, or the next time the video camera showed day 21 or day 14 or day 11, whatever the days were, I could just imagine myself lying in bed next to my wife and thinking, oh my God. And while I was sitting in the theater, that increased the fear for me.
Yeah.
Kelly,
yeah, when
you
I
been,
saw it, every, well, everyone in the audience, every time one of the night sequences started, everyone announced you could just feel them squirm and go, ugh,
yeah,
like with dread. And it was like it was a brilliant effect, because it costs nothing to get that. And you can,
right,
he's manipulating this entire, it's awesome.
So
it's
I think an iconic, we will get from this movie, it's doing very well. I've been very pleased to see how well it's another one also like Blair Witch Project, where it's moved forward. It's had big studio backing, but it's moved forward with this great sort of viral word of mouth stuff. And I predict an iconic image from this movie will be the framing of the two of them lying in bed, and then the doorway behind them with the dark hallway. I mean, I think that's this is one of those horror movies that's going to give us an iconic image like that.
Yeah. Did it bug you guys that he never closed the door?
Well,
like
that's such a huge part of the visuals there is,
yeah,
that's again something you can relate to. You're in a room where you can see everything in the room, but then there's that dark hallway. You know, it's like Jaws being scary underwater, because you can see in the water around you, but what's going to emerge from the murk? I mean, he couldn't have, yes, it would have made sense to close the damn door, but for visual reasons, that's, you can't do that. If I was making that film, I'd have to come up with some reason that doorway has to be open, because
can open the door and it can go through the door. So the door closed and the demon going through it would be a legitimate, like the demon could have done it.
But right. Kelly, it's not just that. It's that he needs to see what's beyond that door. I mean, the point of filming it is to see, and the point of the camera being in the room is to see what's beyond that door. He doesn't close the door because he wants to see what's coming up. Mika needs to see what's coming up.
Yeah.
And that question makes – it would be just like saying, well, why did they put a shark cage in the water in Jaws? Well – I mean, they need to see the shark. They need – they're trying to lure the demon.
But both those efforts were failures. So
it is
well,
true.
For the character, but not for the predator.
Yeah.
Who
I guess I
you
thought
on,
she
genius?
Would have
– what'd you say?
The
Who
predator.
Side are you on?
I don't know. Did he shift sides just now?
I think he did.
Maybe he did. I forget. He's just being contrarian, which I like. But – I would have thought – see, you just made a good case for it. Not a great case, but a good case. But
thanks.
I thought she would have insisted or said something. Like, that conversation could have come up between those two characters, and then that's why they let the door open. I don't know.
But obviously it didn't for film – for the reasons of the visual appeal of the film. I mean, I think Oren Peli knew that – that's the name of the director, by the way. I don't know if that's how you say it, and it sounds funny, but Oren Peli, that's his name. I think he knew that that's the visual image he wanted. Is the bed purposefully framed where it's off to one side, you know, the wide angle lens, and then the doorway with the stairway visible in the back and those two rooms in the back, and you know the door to the attic is on the right. I mean, that stuff, that's every bit as impressive as, say, the insane asylum in Session 9, as far as
a
location brought to life, where you have a sense for, you know, this place just has so much character. And the beauty of Paranormal Activity is this place is so mundane, and we can all relate to something like that. You know, I've got this hallway in my house, and I think of that image when I look down the dark hallway.
So they, you sleep with your door open?
Shutting the door makes no more sense than leaving the house for her, because she's the one. She's in the room.
Right, right.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
You're just being contrary, but we like that about you.
Yeah. I'd shut that door, though, if I was that guy. That's how... you mentioned that the ending didn't work for you.
Let's talk about that. So here, let me before I want to hear. I want Dingus to explain this, but I want to also say the background of the movie. It was shot in 2006. It did a couple of film festivals. I think something called Scream Fest and then Slam Dance. It did the festival circuit in 2007, 2008, and then Paramount picked it up, and they were going to give it the same treatment as. Oh, and by the way, here's another found footage movie. Wreck, R-E-C. Kelly, have you seen that?
No.
No, that's the one I haven't seen, but
okay.
I want to.
So they were going to give it the same treatment as Wreck, which was a Spanish film that they bought the rights to so that they could remake it rather than release it here in the U.S., and they made a terrible remake. So they were going to do that to Paranormal Activity. They were going to take this guy's movie and then just remake it with a bigger budget.
Right.
But Steven Spielberg apparently liked it, thought it worked, and said, you know
he
what?
He thought it was haunted, by the way. Did you read that?
Yeah, he's a big he goofball. Right. And that's not the worst that he thought about it. Yeah. So Dingus, why don't you tell us what Steven Spielberg wanted changed in this movie, what he did to it?
He wanted more gophers or prairie dogs. I'm not sure which one.
And what else did he want in this movie?
Besides the one in the bathroom?
He wanted a whole family of gophers. It would be so cute and great.
And would they do a take straight to the camera, like sort of mugging it at the camera?
Absolutely. They would definitely break the sixth wall. I think it's the sixth wall at this point.
Would they help Shia LaBeouf?
No. Nobody can at this point.
I thought Tom was a Shia LaBeouf apologist. I guess I'm wrong.
I'm getting over that.
All right.
All right. Well.
All right, Tom.
Oh, what?
I was going to say. All right, Tom. What I think you're going for is that.
I looked it up and read it on Wikipedia. You jerk.
Right. So we know it's true. It's been corroborated by independent science.
Exactly.
The Wikipedia, by the way, article is sourced by this L.A. Times article that you were talking about, Kat.
Oh. Okay. Then. Right.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
What's he right. saying?
Go ahead, Tom.
What did Spielberg do?
So Spielberg thought it would be a good idea to do the little twist at the end where she has a demon face and basically eats the camera or whatever. You know, she lunges at the camera.
Not just that. He that whole throwing thing, that's his idea.
No, because I like that part. So I think that.
I did too.
I understand that you all love Steven Spielberg, and that's fine. And you're great Steven Spielberg fanboys, but that whole sequence of throwing the body and the demon, that's all him.
I'm a that ending apologist, and I'll tell you why. It's because when
Before you do, Kelly Wand, Dingus, I want to hear from you. So what problem do you have with it?
I think it's all for us and has nothing to do with the story or with what's going on in the film. What's happened in the climax of the film is what you hear going on downstairs, and what you should see is her coming back and getting back in bed, you know, with blood on her shirt, covered in blood, however you want to put it. Everything that the demon has needed to do has been done. Throwing the body at the camera at the very end, spoiler alert, and you know, going beyond that with the demon face is purely for the audience of the film. And if you want to construct some sort of fiction about the demon wanting to get into our heads as well, that's fine. But I think that has nothing to do with the story that's being told.
Okay, Kelly, can you defend rebuttal?
I thought it was cool because
you can just stop there. That sells it for me. I'm sold.
And it was fun too.
To quote Paul Krugman,
he warned us about this movie.
Yeah. Mika Sloat, the dude in the movie, earlier makes that speech about how he's in control and he's on top of it and he's got a plan. And so having his body thrown at the camera is like the demon saying that you're not in control, mm-hmm. which to me is pretty clever of the demon and very subtle.
And well, okay, obviously what? The demon definitely has it out for Mika, because the whole thing with the glass being smashed and the scratches under the glass.
Oh, I thought you talked about Blair Witch there for a second. Sorry. Go on.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Obviously, the demon does feel antagonistic specifically towards Mika in ways that it doesn't towards Katie. So that works for me as well. You know, the demon, but what Christian would probably argue is all that gets taken care of downstairs.
I like Christian's ending too, and I like the other two endings. They supposedly shot a ton of endings, but the two I read about was one where the cops come up and discover her.
Terrible.
And she kills the friend too.
I don't think she kills the friend. The friend runs off, I believe, and brings in the cops, if I'm not mistaken.
She hears the friend downstairs. Oh, you might be right. Because I didn't see it.
The friend comes up. Yeah, none of us have seen it. We've read about these, and I think when the movie screened at
film festivals, they could all be apocryphal.
Had these endings. They could all be apocryphal, yes. But I think the friend who Dingus swore he had seen in Gilmore Girls, which he's a big fan of. we looked it up. She has not been in Gilmore Girls. The friend comes in and sees Katie, catatonic on the bed, covered in blood, and then runs back out. And then the film fast forwards again, and then the police come in, and she gets up with a knife, and they shoot her. So that's one of the endings.
Oh, well, you don't know that she doesn't kill the friend in that scenario. Maybe you just don't hear it.
Well, the friend left. You mean she kills the friend after she gets shot by the cops?
She kills the friend downstairs, and then the cops come eventually.
But she's on camera the whole time. She doesn't leave. She's just laying there catatonic in the bed.
Maybe she kills her with her mind.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
The other ending was Katie slits her throat, which I thought was also a cool ending.
And no, I think that is horrible. It's a horrible idea.
I'm not crazy about that one either. So here's one that was someone posted this on the IMDb message board, which I can't believe I was reading that. And the body gets thrown. I didn't like the demon face because that sort of physical manifestation of this demon can give you creepy, scary teeth and, you know, black eyes or whatever. That's that whole Jacob's Ladder thing. That was so unnecessary. You know, the rules have sort of been established that the demon, you know, what it can and can't do, what powers it does, you know, the fact that it can morph somebody into looking scary, I didn't need that. And plus, I knew that was going to happen, too. The whole movie, I was kind of dreading, at some point, you know, that's such a found footage thing. At some point, there's going to be like at some point, there's going to be a scary face right into the camera. Jennifer's body, that's the whole thing. You were talking about that.
See, it poisoned the well for you. I think Jennifer's body.
But all movies, you know, that's such a horror movie trope is the girl with the scary face lunging at you. I mean, Paranormal Activity was so good for not relying on these cheap tactics. And the fact that it goes out with a tactic.
Yeah. There are no cat scares in the movie.
Yes.
None at all.
There is an ice cream scare.
That doesn't count. We've already talked. There's no cat scare. You know, when I said this before, when he peeks up into the attic and when he's going up in the attic, I kind of had this fleeting feeling of, okay, you haven't done all these cat scares. And so you've earned, you've earned one. If you want to do one now where a rat comes out, that's okay. I'll give you that. But it never falls back on that. It never falls back on this. There's a rat. There's something weird. Everything is just solid.
There's a spider scare.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, there's a spike. But I
agree with you though, Dingus. Yes.
I think the demon face has one virtue in that it proves that the demon is mad at the camera.
You know, I have to tell you that any of this and this is kind of again veering us back, any of this antagonism for the camera or for Mika is completely misplaced. The demon would not have any reason to be antagonistic toward either one of those because those are merely tools that the demon is using to get into this world.
What are you talking about? It's malevolent. Malevolent gives you carte blanche to be antagonistic towards whatever you want.
Yeah, and I thought demons had a thing about mirrors, and a camera's like a mirror, so it makes perfect sense.
Again, we're just assuming the mythology of demons. But this creature, whatever it is using Mika and using the camera to get access to this world into Katie. And through the years and years and years, it has not been able to or has been biding his time to do so. Mika finally affords him the chance to get full access to this world. Mika is just another tool to get access to this world. He has no antagonism toward the camera or Mika.
Yes, he does.
Mika and the camera.
No, he does not.
Say
that when you have no
Mika.
Why would he scratch?
No, he does not. Mika
picture.
He smashes the picture.
Yeah,
that's antagonism.
Exactly. If I did
what
that,
emotion is that?
Feel antagonized.
Because that presses Mika's buttons to again do more things that afford him access to this world.
No.
Mika,
he doesn't care what Mika does. He finds Mika negligible.
Mika is his enabler. Mika enables him to come into the world in a way that he has never been able to in years since Katie was 8 years old. He has not been able to gain access to this world until this guy comes along.
Okay, Dingus, then why does he kill Mika? Why doesn't he just, like, give him a kiss on the cheek and let him go and thank him?
Because he's done with him. And not only that.
Why does he kill him? Why does he need to kill him? That's needlessly antagonistic.
No, it is not. Because the murder of Mika is the final culmination to fully possessing Katie.
Is that in one of your books?
No.
Made that up.
No. If he can get her to
kill...
If he can get her to kill the man she loves, then he has possessed her entirely.
You're making that up. It sounds good, but you don't have any basis for that other than that you want it to be true, which is
fine. She's already possessed before that when she's in bed and you hear the two voices and she goes, everything's going to be fine now. Like, she's already completely possessed by that point.
No, she's almost there, and I would argue that actually murdering the man she loves is the final step and why the demon has finally overtaken her.
So you're the one who says it's not a demon, but you're so sure you know the demon's motives. Just saying.
I'm using the word demon instead of calling it Fred.
Mothman.
Dingus, I would
Richard
agree
Gere.
With you.
Let's
if
call it Richard Gere.
We all Chapstick. The exposition, all we Caps know about the demon. I would agree with you, Dingus, if there was some exposition to support this. But all that the movie makers want you to know about the demon is what the psychic tells you early on, in that it's not human, we don't understand its motives, it comes from somewhere else, it's pure malevolence. If there was something about, you know, it needs a blood sacrifice to come into the world, because, you know, like Drag Me to Hell, for instance, is full of that kind of crap, then I would say, yeah, okay, yeah, that's fine, let's go with that.
If it's pure malevolence, why doesn't it just burn down the house? It can start a fire on the Ouija board, then just burn down the house.
You don't know where it's going to go from there. She's still at large. Katie Featherston could be waiting outside your front door right now, Dingus. For all you
She's
know.
Doing interviews right now, and they're not arresting her. It's weird.
Are you serious? They do know her whereabouts?
What does whereabouts even mean?
I don't know.
Hold on. I'm writing down. Dingus made another inside reference that no one else will get.
All right. I'll explain this one. Somebody behind me in the theater, some dopey kid behind me, when that final title card goes up, says, what does that mean? Whereabouts? And then her friend explained, they don't know where she is. And then the other girl says, but what does the word whereabouts mean?
That was good.
That story.
So by the way, Dingus, real quick, you're sort of popping your microphone a little bit.
I don't know what that means.
So here's what I think, and I credit this to a fella on Quarter to Three named Dean. So Dean came up with what I think is a sort of succinct way to explain what's going on with the body being thrown and the demon face. The idea is that, and the more I think about this, the more I think it's effective, is that you have to be open to, like, negative feelings to let the demon in, for it to sort of come into the world. And that's what it's trying to do, right? That's set up. And in the course of the movie, we see that that's what happens to Mika and Katie, is they become increasingly open to negative feelings. You know, Mika is an enabler. The demon comes into the world, but the movie is the message it wants to leave you with is that now you are infected with that negativity. You have now seen
like
all
funny
of
funny games.
It's sort of like, yeah, that's a very good call. Nobody's seen that, but yeah, you have now seen
or
all
28
of this stuff,
weeks later,
and you are now complicit in the negativity that lets this thing into the world. And furthermore, it knows. And that's the point of it throwing the body at the camera, lunging at the camera, and the fact that there are no credits. You know, Dean pointed out that the movie ends, and this is a brilliant touch, with just a black screen, no credits, and that sort of bass throbbing sound that was associated with the demon's presence. That now is what you are left with sitting in a dark theater after the movie has stopped. You know, the little legal disclaimer has come up, and there's that black screen and that bass sound effect. So the idea now is that you have been infected with this sort of negativity that enables the demon. So I think that's kind of what they were going for from a sort of a narrative perspective.
So the demon gave me kidney stones. It all makes sense now.
There you go. You're letting it into the world, Kelly Wand, by allowing kidney stones to afflict you. Way to go. Nice move.
Do not pass those kidney stones.
All right, I'll keep them.
Thank you.
They're holy.
Well, Tom, that's very nice, and it's a very nice interpretation, but it's a total retcon. Even if we don't know that Steven Spielberg came in and said, "Let's throw the body of the camera,"
Well, I wish we didn't know that.
Well, I do too, but even if I hadn't known that, I would know that those two final moments are completely dissonant with the rest of the movie. Throwing the body of the camera. They are. That has nothing to do with it, and the demon is not trying to get into us and make us think it's negative.
How do you
That's
know?
Not what this is about.
Yes, it is.
This is a document.
It's the arc.
You're reading blood sacrifice into it.
Yeah, exactly. No, at least I'm not coming up with something about, some ritual book from the Necronomicon where it demands a blood sacrifice.
Be coming.
Okay, so Dingus, you have this whole idea about like some blood ritual or something the demon needs to come into the world. But what's been established, the whole arc of the movie, I think the character development of Paranormal Activity, in a way, is the demon's increasing power from the door just moving a few inches to Mika's body being flung across the room. That is the arc of the movie, is the demon getting increasingly powerful. And the point of the movie is that ultimately it busts out of the movie. So there you go.
Oh, that is awful.
Wow, he sure ripped you a new one there with that improvised comment.
He busts out of the movie and becomes Ferris Bueller. No, I agree with you up until that last moment. But Mika provides for him a shortcut.
See,
because he's willing to spend 50 more years, if that's what it takes, to break into the world. With the camera is another tool that will enable him to cross over more quickly. And my point is that you're right, but it's already happened downstairs. Why the body needs to be thrown to the camera has nothing to do with that.
Yes, he's coming to get you now, Dingus.
Yeah.
He's not coming to get
grudge.
Me.
So Dingus has arbitrarily, I think, assigned Mika as the way into the world for the demon. While as we are saying, it's more the camera and the demon's mad at the camera and Mika, but Mika can't help him get into the world. He's just like,
Katie is his way into the world. Mika and the camera are tools that help bridge that gap.
Katie's always mad when the camera's on, though, so maybe that's more evidence that
her feelings are immaterial. Otherwise, she could not murder the man she loves.
Her feelings are immaterial.
if you're going to go with, and somebody else made this point on Quarter to Three, that Katie's really mad at.
Hello.
What
happened?
Hello?
What happened
what
there?
Was
I don't know. It was a demon. It was Dingus inviting the demon in.
Yeah, I'm gonna invite him in.
It always cuts out when he's Dingus gets really rolling. Then
he's clearly on my side. Yeah. He doesn't want his secrets out.
Well, here's the thing, Dingus, is I kind of agree with you. I would have liked a more subtle ending. I liked the idea of the body being thrown across the room. I mean, seeing that much power, I enjoyed that. I didn't like the goofy demon face. I'm just sort of explaining what I think they were going for. I'm trying to get into the head of Steven Spielberg. You know, why does he want to do that to this otherwise great little pat, well put together movie?
But you should be more interested in getting into the head of Oren, whatever his name is.
At least I know his name. At least I know his name.
Pelly.
That's right.
But Oren Pelly obviously vetted the ending too. Like he didn't. He could have said,
No, you can't do that to Steven Spielberg. I don't think. If Steven Spielberg had said at the ending, "Let's have aliens come to Earth hundreds of years later and discovered this tape, Orhan Pelli would have had to go, okay, let's do it.
Well, Tom, I thought two things related to that. One, I thought, what if somebody had come back when Jaws was being made and said to Steven Spielberg, instead of the oxygen tank, we would really like to have a bazooka. Can you work a bazooka into the script?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would he felt about that?
Mm-hmm.
How would he have felt about his film being, totally bastardized? And maybe he would have been fine with it.
Well, okay, but you said two things, so I just want to address that one real quick.
Go ahead.
What if Tom likes the bazooka?
I wish they'd done that. That would have been better. Because air tanks don't do that when you shoot them, by the way. Everybody knows that.
I'm just using that as a placeholder for something wild and extravagant.
Right.
And the other thing I was wondering, as I sort of thought about the sequence where she gets dragged out of bed and dragged down the hall,
mm-hmm.
and sort of thinking that maybe he didn't have that, but he sort of said to Steven Spielberg, I really wish we could have had something. We could have afforded something where she gets yanked out of bed and dragged down the hall. So any of this – and when I thought about that, I sort of started thinking, any of this presupposing or us trying to imagine what the filmmaker's intentions are is a little bit misguided because – because maybe if he could have afforded it, maybe he always wanted to have a body thrown at the camera. So it's a little bit, I don't know what the word is, disingenuous or whatever, for me to assume that his original ending is her creeping into bed, just because I like that more.
Right, but I'm just wanting to be sort of an apologist briefly. I more or less agree with you. I would have liked something more subtle at the end. But I can see why they did it. And I think more what it is, Dingus, is Steven Spielberg is in touch with kids today. And he knows they want some kind of a scary payoff thing. You know, he knows they want to see they want the curtain pulled aside and you want to see the little man back there. So that's what's going on. Like Independence Day originally, they never showed the aliens. And they tested it and, okay, we need to have Will Smith actually punch an alien. That got added in. So I think Steven Spielberg just kind of his sense was we have to give some kind of a money shot to this movie for people with no imagination, and I can understand why he would do that. I kind of wish he didn't.
I do not understand. I understand what you're going for there, and I think you're probably right, Tom. But I don't understand what actual impact that has. I think since they embedded into the trailer, which is awful.
Watch the trailer. Yeah,
I didn't see the trailer.
But you should watch it, Kelly, just to see how much it spoils.
I think it's sort of self-perpetuating. I'm going to put this in and put it in the trailer, and then they'll have to see it. It's a trailer image that is powerful in the trailer, but it's ruined it ruins the image in the movie if you've already seen it in the trailer.
So at
that point in the film, when you're watching the last couple shots, I don't know what you're hoping to gain by catching what the kids think is cool at that point. If they've liked the film up until that point and you have a subtle ending or that let's throw a body at the camera ending, I think they're going to leave with a positive feeling or a negative feeling based on how good the film has been. I don't know how having a button like that helps, and I think that's just ego. I think that's just Steven Spielberg saying, I want to change something, and this is what I would do, and not letting the filmmaker do what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if we can get him on the podcast here.
Yeah, you've interviewed him.
I'll give him a call. I have a cell phone.
You're the one with the hookup to Steve. Something else that I think is good about this ending, mm-hmm. that's not like the other ones, is it makes the demon... I mean, I think I'm giving it more of a free pass just because I was, like, relieved it was over because I was getting all tensed out. So I felt like I'd survived the roller coaster, so I kind of liked it. But the demon escapes in this, and so its motives are sort of uncertain and still roaming around, while as in the other ones, Kitty dies in every scenario that I've heard.
Oh, yeah, it kind of wraps up, doesn't it? That's sort of the ending. It's a bow on the package, as it were, and this is more open-ended.
Yeah, now she's – and it doesn't even seem like a curse. Like you're turning into this powerful undead creature.
She's like a superhero now. This is an origin story.
Yeah, like the mummy.
The ending that I started to mention before that someone suggested on the IMDb comment section was the body gets thrown in to the room, and then you see Katie just disregard it and recede back into the darkness and turn the corner where we know there's a closet and a ladder that goes up into the attic, and she just goes up into the attic. And then there's like a minute of just nothing on the film, and then it fades out. This idea that she is so completely, you know, taken over and unconcerned with this loved one who she has just killed, doesn't care about the camera anymore, you know, going back to that one little secret place where we don't know what was going on up there, and it, the rest of it's just left to your imagination.
That's good.
I would have liked something like that. But it ultimately, you know what, Dingus, you said it ruined the movie, but do you really feel that?
No. Okay. No, not at all. And that's what I was just thinking as we talked about this in the last couple minutes, is that I don't care for those last two moments, but I still love the movie. And I think we should talk about the things that are strong about the movie beyond that, like the brilliant way it's built, the way the sound is done and those things, because there are things about this movie that are so powerful, and just those last couple of moments do not ruin the movie for me.
Okay. Because I think we go ahead, Kelly.
Well, I think it's possible to have a final 2 seconds ruin a movie. Like Unbreakable was kind of ruined for me by the last 2 seconds.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. I'm really glad you brought that up, because I this is totally going off the rails here, but I put in Sixth Sense to try to get there's a one moment in Sixth Sense that reminded me of this movie, and I thought, well, maybe all of Sixth Sense is as good as this movie. You know, when the kid goes to the bathroom in the middle of the night and there's like a shadow going behind him or something. There's so many moments in Paranormal Activity that are powerful like that. And Sixth Sense really does not hold up. But I really liked Unbreakable. I don't remember what you're even talking about, Kelly.
Where the text comes up, you just find out he's put in an asylum off screen. you know.
And that ruins
text up. Yeah, it does. There was one other movie where text comes up, and I hate it. But you can make movies can be made too in the last 2 seconds.
That's very true. Yes.
That's true.
Here's one, the end of Michael Clayton. You know, it's all on George Clooney's face and he can't pull off what they're trying to do. It's just like 2 minutes of him in the back of a car at the end, and you know, it's supposed to be that like long Good Friday ending with Bob Hoskins being driven off to his death and all that emotion playing on his face. You know, the same kind of thing happening. Michael Clayton's been through all that, and it's George Clooney just sort of being good looking and smug.
Wait, that's the part you liked?
No, I thought that was like, you know, they needed a better actor to pull off that ending. I liked Michael Clayton. I liked George Clooney. But it's sort of like, you know, you really can't do this with George Clooney. You need – this isn't the ending you should be putting on this movie.
Yeah. Cannonball Run 2 also.
Oh, God, the ending of that. Yeah. Jeez.
The monkey wins. Spoiler alert. Well, that means Tony Danza won too, because he was with the monkey, right? So that's
well, of course.
He doesn't seem to get any credit for it.
I actually have no idea what you're talking about. I can't believe Cannonball Run 2. Good lord.
It's one with Sinatra. You should look it up on the IMDb message boards where you haunt.
We'll do that on our next podcast.
Speaking of haunting, one last question, at least for me, and then you guys can ask your last questions. Do you believe in ghosts, and if so, what are they? Or demons? Boring? Yeah, it's boring. No one cares. All right. I'm done. That's all I know.
Well, then you have to answer your own question. You...
I think there's too many sightings for it to be complete bullshit, but I think they're like psychic residue. But they're not animate, like they can't think or anything. But they're like video cassettes of spirits.
Okay.
And I'm an atheist.
So do you watch those Ghostbuster, or not Ghost Hunters thing?
Ghostbuster. No, they can't find something every week. So the premise already, I mean, if it was just one movie about a paranormal activity, then I'd go see it. But,
Is there?
Are they good? I don't. Maybe I should watch them.
You know what? I kind of work for the people who make those, so I'm going to say, yeah, they're awesome. I don't know. I can't imagine they're any good. They've got to be terrible.
I should watch one, though.
Okay.
You tipped me to it. Shows, not enough ghosts. this point. Thanks, Tom Chick.
Well, you're right. They can't. I mean, if they, yeah, there's no, even the stuff in this movie, for instance, this is one of the things I liked in Paranormal Activity is for the most part, this footage wouldn't prove that there was a demon. You know, this footage, well, it could all be faked, of course. You know, at first you only hear little noises. Like Mika is so proud of himself for getting things like the door moving. But, you know, there's stuff like that all over. You know, people go on Art Bell all the time with this kind of footage. UFO hoaxes and that Bigfoot in the ice chest and all that stuff. And there's really nothing in the movie until you get that stupid demon face that necessarily has to be, you know, that couldn't be engineered or somehow.
So it could have been all in their heads until the ending, and that's why the ending sucks.
What's funny is one of the things that Dingus copped to after we saw the movie was like, oh, at one point I thought it was all going to be a hoax. Do you remember that, Dingus?
Oh yeah, when he's sharing with her his findings about the Diane and her story and how it perfectly matches with Katie's story, I thought that was going to be the oh well that's where Katie got her whole story about since I was eight and he's saying boy it's so uncanny that everything that happened to Diane happened to you. I thought what we were going for was oh well. That's why. And there's no reason why all of this can't be edited because we're seeing it well after the fact. We're not seeing it in real time. Yeah. Right? It's not like we have to figure, well, gee, Mika wouldn't have time to edit all of this or she wouldn't have time to edit all of this before he watches it in the morning and gets creeped out by the footage. All of this can be a hoax because we're watching it because the San Diego Police Department has allowed us to watch it sometime past 2006.
All right. Right. Well, they're making money off it because we paid to go see it. So we've already paid the ticket fee. So we're right. Watching a documentary.
Well, and even the title card is, you know, Paramount wishes to express their gratitude to the families of Katie Featherston and Mika Sloat for allowing us to use this footage. I mean, that's the only title card for the movie. I mean, there's no credits or anything. That's all there is. So, yeah, that's very much the internal fiction is that this tape's been kicking around. Maybe it's been doctored. Maybe it hasn't. Who knows? Hey, someone at Paramount got it. Let's sell it. Let's put it in theaters and let people watch it. And they don't do anything in the context of the movie to say, hey, this is a movie. I don't even think Oren Peli's name appears ever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's kind of a giveaway that it's called Paramount Activity, though.
That was the original title they were going to go.
That's the studio they wanted to do.
Would you not recommend this movie to certain people? I'll answer the question first. It's much better than your question, Kelly. there are certain people that we know. Like for instance, there's a couple that was going to go with us, and the woman from the couple, a good friend of ours named Erin, was a little reluctant to go, and she was like, you know. I already get freaked out when I'm home alone. I don't really know that I want to see this. And we were all pushing her, saying, hey, go with it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great, fun horror movie. We'll all go together. It'll be a group thing. And after seeing it, I sent her an email saying, you know, I think you made the right decision.
Because you're like a girl.
I am in touch with my feminine side, and I can understand how, you know, a woman alone in a house, this can be, I don't want to say psychically damaging, but it's an enormously effective movie at preying on a human weakness, and that's fear of vulnerability when you're asleep.
One who sleeps should see it.
Well, not no one. I'm just saying that people who understand their fear threshold and who understand that, you know, I was very uptight watching the movie. I did not enjoy it. I had a stomach ache. Ultimately, I got past that, and I really got into the craft of the movie, and I'm enjoying talking about it with you guys. I adored seeing it, and I'm looking forward, by the way, to seeing it again with less of the tension and more of the I can just sort of respect and admire it. But a friend of ours, like Erin, I don't think she can divorce herself from the process that much. Or Dingus, our friend Eden. I don't think Eden should see this. So that's the, one of the reasons I ask is there are a lot of great fun horror movies that are completely innocuous. I don't think this is one of them.
I would agree with
that.
But
it's also one of the greatest horror movies ever. So,
but
you're denying those people their trial by fire.
I know, right. Yes, I am. And
honed in great filmmaking.
We'll say I'm sparing them their trial by fire. I agree with you, though. Yes, I am doing that.
What's fascinating to me, Tom, is to hear you say what you just said, because I think if I remember correctly, after we saw it, you had said something about not wanting to see it again or not right. needing to see it again.
Right.
And it's fascinating to me to hear you say you're excited to see it again.
Are you not? I mean, do you feel the same way? Actually, both of you. Is it a movie you would want to see again?
Yeah.
I would certainly like to see it again.
Okay. I want to see if it was just me or the movie. That'll be what I'm doing the second time.
So. Yep.
And studying it and going, this scared me. Warren Pelly's not so great.
Well, go ahead, Dingus.
I also so loved... I loved the way the build happened. Even, mm-hmm. you know, I think it was perfectly built, and I'm also really excited to see it again with a really great sound system, because you said this, Tom, when we saw it, or right after we saw it, the sound design for this film is phenomenal, and I would really like to hear it again. I am a lover of scores and soundtracks, and this film has no score other than his goofy song he wants to play before the doctor comes, and I'm fascinated by that, how the film works.
Which was kind of like Tom's song at the beginning of this podcast.
exactly right, Kelly. But I'm fascinated to really pay attention to the sound.
And that, by the way, two things. My theory is that when he's playing that music for the psychic to come, it's the theme to The Exorcist, but they couldn't get the rights. So the other thing is the sound design is such a part of the demon's escalation.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, certain scenes I just keep playing over in my head, and one of them is the very first incident that's captured on film, which is that bass rumble, and then you hear some indeterminate noise downstairs. And you later find out it was just the keys hitting the floor. You know, the demon managed to throw the keys on the floor. That was his first appearance. And it escalates all the way up to this just bone-chilling, like, animal scream. I think The Exorcist opened with that noise, that animal noise, as Max von Sydow is in the desert looking at the statue of the demon, and the dogs are snarling in the background. So it starts with its sort of scariest noise, whereas Paranormal Activity slowly builds up to it, just like it builds up the demon's power. The sound design is a part of the demon's escalating power, his increasing foothold on the world. So that's another reason I really want to see it again, go ahead.
Well, that's really true, and what's great about it is that, and you made a joke about this earlier, is that it starts with that red herring sound effect of the ice maker, and then it moves on to the keys, which I'm surprised you said that, because I knew it was keys soon as I heard that sound.
How did you know it was keys?
I just knew that was the sound of keys falling.
He's married. He knows the sound of falling keys.
Exactly. You know, we've had many key parties over here.
Whoa. I'll edit that out.
And what? then that final, one of the wonderful things is that final, footsteps up the stairs, which I think if you count takes far too long.
Yeah,
it's far too many steps, and it's beautiful because of that. It just keeps pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding. And
the demon's four-legged. Maybe he's got four.
That's a good point.
And he has to take each step one at a time.
Yeah.
They're very stubby legs.
He's clearly a three-toed demon anyway, so right. Maybe he's having trouble. Maybe he's slipping on each step.
That's why he likes buxom brunettes, which is his whole motive. If you look at
Diane's
picture.
I don't know what the word buxom means. What's that?
Rack. Good.
It means truculent.
Okay, good.
By the way, on the IMDb chat boards that Tom likes, if there's a cast here of like seven or eight actors – and like the eighth or seventh one nominated mentioned.
Wow, Kelly.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. It's Crystal Cartwright as Exorcism Manny.
What?
So who's that?
Didn't make the cut. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, in trying to establish whether or not the girl playing Amber was on Gilmore Girls, we looked up the cast list, And one of the girls who gets a credit, her picture simply appeared in the website they go to about the previous manifestation. So she gets a credit in the movie because her picture's on their little mock-up website that they came up with. So, but yeah, this exorcist nanny, I don't remember her.
Oh, good Lord. You have totally creeped me out, Kelly. I wish you hadn't brought up the word nanny. Can you imagine this film if one of those two bedrooms had a kid in it? Good God, thanks.
There should have been a kid in it. Now, see? That's a good sequel. Idea.
Sequels.
And now I'm thinking about why is there that big fucking stuffed bear back there?
Yeah.
Because they were going to have a baby, maybe.
Right, now I'm not
The bear was a red herring, and the pool was a red herring. It really surprised me.
That's right. Yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
Well, and also the
poltergeist references.
Yeah, well, the Russian demonologist was a red herring, too.
Yeah.
You know, oh, great.
He was an awesome red herring. Yeah, out of the country for a few days.
Yeah.
I thought he was German. He's Russian.
I like that the ghost guy didn't know any other demonologists at all. He only knows one guy, and the guy's no interest. By the way, Amber Armstrong, who plays the friend that you just mentioned, right. She has one other credit on IMDb, the chat box that you like, and it's called The Code, Legend of the Gamers, and she plays Live Auto. So,
can you say her real name for us?
Amber Armstrong?
She has another name. I don't know which page.
That wasn't on IMDb, Dingus. We found that. I forgot where we found that.
Is that on Wikipedia?
No, it's IMDb.
Apparently, her name is an anglicized version of U with an umlaut, MBR.
Oh.
It's or like no, UBE.
No, her name is like Amsaver, and then the character's name is Uber.
That's right. Yeah.
So IMDb's mistaken, and I'm not.
It's not mistaken. That's the name they want the actress to have, but her actual name is something else. It's some other.
Oh, all right, let's move on.
Here's a scene that I thought of after watching Paranormal Activity. What's part of what's amazing about the way the movie creeps you out, even though you never see anything, the scene where she says she can feel it breathing on her.
Yeah.
Holy crap. And there's nothing there.
And her hair
there's going to be nothing there. It reminded me in a way of the scene in Poltergeist where Joe Beth Williams, what's her name, bends down to a cabinet and then gets up and then all of the chairs are arranged on the table. There's this idea that you're looking at a scene, but there are so many, you know, it's full of some kind of a presence that can manipulate the physical world when it wants to.
In the day.
In the Poltergeist scene is during the day.
Yeah.
And she gets back up and all those chairs are arranged on the dining room table. This idea that there's a presence that can be there, even though you're watching a movie, you're used to seeing through a camera, you're going to see if something is there. But reinforcing that, you know, something is present, and you can't see it, but it is there and the actors know and it can affect the world. That was great. They get so much mileage. And going into the movie too, I kind of knew that it was going to be a low-budget, found-footage gimmick kind of thing. And I was sort of expecting tricks like that, like a door moving or, you know, a curtain moving or something. But it was still so enormously effective, even though I expected that stuff. They really sold it using a fairly small bag of tricks, I thought.
Yeah, and they make you wait even for that stuff. They make you wait even for the little things.
Yep.
So by then you're not sure if it's going to be little, and it is, and then...
Kelly, I think that's the point, because I put in Sixth Sense and just watched the first half hour of it just to get a feel for the movie, and almost at the very beginning of the movie you have this scene, or this sequence I should say, where Toni Collette is feeding Haley Joel Osment breakfast, and she like closes.
Oh yeah.
She leaves the room and she walks right back into the room and every drawer and every cabinet door is open. And this is at the beginning of the movie. Mm. And I'm just thinking of how Paranormal Activity builds to those moments.
Right.
And how a movie like this just sort of like bleh.
Sort of vomits him up right off the bat.
Right.
And that's
too,
so derivative.
That's such an open ripoff of Poltergeist.
It really is, isn't it? I remember thinking that at the time. It's like, okay, this M. Night Shyamalan fella is creatively bankrupt.
I forgot about that. I was going to defend Sixth Sense, and now I can't.
Well, I really wanted to because I remember loving it because I saw it in a theater full of people with people I really liked, and I didn't know what was coming, and it was a great experience at the time.
Yeah. I didn't guess the ending because I'm an idiot. And I think I try to dumb myself down when I go into movies a little bit, so that I give it every chance. I give it every possible escape hatch. And yeah.
Kelly, when you saw it, was it in a full theater?
Yeah, in the day with kids, and they were all like dead silent. It was amazing.
I love that. I love that.
It's silent. Yeah, people brought their like 3-year-olds to it.
Stop
it. Oh, kids like that? I thought you meant like 16-year-olds.
No, like 8-year-olds. So they were traumatized, and I could hear them being traumatized.
Are you serious?
I watched the movie. Yeah, it was awesome. Oh my God. Great feeling. Yeah. Man, if I was 8, I would have it would have stayed with me forever. So I was kind of envious in a way.
Are you being facetious?
No, because horror movies affect you most when you're really, really young.
Yeah, of course.
You're too young to see them, and so those are going to be the ones you remember. Like, oh, the day I saw Paranormal Activity, that one freaked me out.
No, I agree with that. I'm just asking.
That's when I turned
to
crime.
Did you actually see it in the middle of the day with a bunch of kids?
Well, I didn't take them. I didn't buy their tickets. I did wear a raincoat.
It was a field trip.
Yeah. It was very wholesome. And what's the facetious part? Why wouldn't I?
No, I'm asking if you actually saw it in a theater during the day with 3-year-olds and it was dead silent, or you're joking.
It was. They were probably closer to like 8 or 9.
Kelly, I think this is Dingus, and I fully support this, by the way. This is his indignant parent act, I believe.
Well, in an R-rated movie, you can bring a toddler to as long as you're 17.
Right, terrible.
I know. That's how retarded the rating system is, basically. never mind.
We saw it with a full house too, and I was worried about people. Dingus, you said there were a couple people behind us talking. The whereabouts kids, like, were they talking during the movie?
Got out of the movie? That's all they said?
No, there was also the beautiful moment, my favorite moment, and I've had a couple of these moments in horror films that there's some yokel behind me saying something that just makes the movie for me, and that's the moment where and this is in the trailer where you see the sheet getting blown up, and then you see the air going under the sheet so that it puffs up at night, and then it blows
so
over.
So glad I didn't see those. So glad.
Well, when that happened and it blew over, behind me, the girl said, "That's her foot." She had to explain that was the foot of the girl to the person next to her. That's how dense that person
is. But you know what that is, Dingus? That's just the movie understanding how everybody gets freaked out when it's late at night and your foot is sticking out from under the covers, and even worse when it's sticking out over the edge of the bed. That's what that girl was reacting to.
Yeah.
But yes, right. That is
fun. Taps into our fear of podiatry.
How dramatic was it when her foot gets moved, and then it further escalates to she gets pulled off the bed, and then it further escalates to she gets dragged down the hall, and the door shuts, and then you later find out that it further escalates to she gets bitten.
Yeah,
right.
That was just that was just an incredible scene for how. Because that's another sort of red herring too, is you see it gradually escalating, moving the door, blowing the curtains, and then suddenly, okay, it's gonna touch her, move her foot. And the fact that it does as much as it does at that time, it sort of breaks the rules. You know, everything up to this point had been relatively gradual in terms of what they experience when they're there. For it to suddenly, jump the gun so quickly. It's like, hey, you're supposed to go more slowly. Slow down.
Yeah.
Grab the foot
first. And that's when the bad vibes have infected the household. Isn't that after the bickering starts? Like a podcast.
You know, that's a really good point, Tom, because does that happen? That must happen after she's gone, after we've had the sequence where she goes downstairs and he finds her just sitting there catatonic on the swing next to the pool, right?
I think so.
Because that's also the first special effect.
Oh, well, yes, it is, Dingus, because they're going to leave the house immediately. That's the next to last thing that's going to happen. She's got the bite on her. They're going to leave the house. Then she goes up and goes to bed and says everything's going to be okay, and then the last night happens. So, yeah, they've had their falling out.
Because up until this point, we don't have any sense that the demon has, or whatever it is, can have this power, can do this.
Right.
And I think that's why I asked earlier if the filmmaker didn't say, I wish we could do this, and then inserted that, because while it's powerful, it is a little bit, like you said, breaking the rules. Because if the demon can do that, why not just, you know, if he is aggressive toward the camera, knock the camera over, or a variety of things. But it's something I appreciate because it's so powerful within the construct of the film.
Well, it's also, I don't think it is a late insert because it is referenced in the website they look up, where they say, and I don't know if he says this or if I just saw the text because I can read so fast, but there's something about that woman saying that she had been bitten, that she had bite marks on her. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember that? Is that something that's said out loud?
I thought I read she clawed her eyes out too. Which never happens.
I think you're right because of there's something about blindness there.
Okay.
But I'm just talking about the special effect of her being yanked off the bed and yanked up.
What someone said on the forum, and I actually believe this, I mean, it's amazing what you can do these days, is that that's not that elaborate. So Kelly, what Dingus and I, what obviously I think happened is they just had, you know, a crew hand grab her leg, pull her out of the bed, then drag her down the hallway, and they later digitally erased him from the frame. But apparently Dingus, that's not a super elaborate, expensive thing to do. Is that you can do that and still have a budget of $11,000 like the movie supposedly has.
Well, I would imagine it would be easier too, given the low light conditions of the filming at that point.
Right, right.
Well, maybe it had the crew member in it till Spielberg's.
And he just had a sheet over him.
Pointed up the cash, right. Or it was Spielberg. And at the last minute, they talked him out of being in the shot. Right.
That's one of the things we wondered, too, is that how much post-production work did they get to do with sound, for instance? Yeah. Did the earlier cuts of the movie not have this great sound? And Dingus, you pointed out, for something that was shot through a video camera, you could always clearly hear the dialogue. You know, you could hear what they were saying. I wonder, was a lot of that post-production work? Was it that good all along?
Not only that, Tom, it's that the range of sound you hear, because
yes. –
Because supposedly everything we see and hear is what is found footage, as you guys have said. But we hear – what we hear is phenomenal and is clearly cheating. Whereas visually, we're not really cheating from what the camera could have seen. But we're clearly cheating from what their sound system could have heard.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But there's also I forget if we said this. Isn't it have the best camera work of any found video movie?
You started to say that, and I didn't. Is it because they don't do so much shaky cam? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
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 Because they have a good excuse to sort of put the camera down and leave it alone. And Christian, you also pointed out when we saw it that normally in these found footage movies, you know, Cloverfield had to go through such narrative gymnastics for, you know, why is that dude carrying the camera the whole time?
And his name's Hutt.
Exactly right. They even name the character after the fact that he's carrying the
Well, his mom knew.
So here, and that worked out great for casting. Yeah. Yeah. So here, they did a better job with it. But the beauty of it is, they let it go. You know, the final moment. is downstairs and nobody picks up the camera. When he goes to save her, he does not go for the camera. And that's a great bit of character development. I mean, she's screaming, of course. It's a terrible thing and you hear that. But it knows when to let loose of this silly conceit that it's found footage. And it does it for, you know, it fits with the character. It doesn't feel cheap. Obviously, you know, obviously they're not going to show an elaborate special effect of a demon possessed Katie mauling Mika. And that's a great way around it, is their conceit with the camera, is they let go of that. You know, if this had been Cloverfield, he would have picked up the camera before he went downstairs, and we would have gotten the CG demon.
You know, and I think, Tom, that perfectly captures why I feel so passionate about those last couple moments.
Sure.
Because they dropped that and they trusted us to fill it in, I wish they would have carried that through.
Right.
Because then just coming in and throwing the body, it's like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. And they didn't need to. What you've just said is great, is that they did. They dropped it and they relied on sound for one thing and the absence of sound because you hear the screaming and then nothing.
Yes, yes.
And that's just chilling.
Yeah.
And that was perfect for me. Yeah. And then they come up and do the other special effects stuff.
Dingus, your homework is see Blair Witch Project.
And Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows.
And play the Blair Witch games.
Oh, I was going to make that joke earlier. I forgot.
Kelly, are there any novelizations I can read?
You look into that. If not, just read the Halo books.
Or graphic novels. Graphic novels, that's what I meant to say.
Kelly, your homework.
Wreck.
Yeah, I can't believe you haven't seen Wreck. Wreck. Well, the thing is, did you see Quarantine, the terrible American remake of it?
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, but you know what? It's a shot-for-shot remake of Wreck.
Oh.
So you've kind of had wrecked for you, spoiled.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it Canadian or something? Is that why I haven't seen it?
It's Spanish.
You know where I stand on Canada.
Well, no, it's Spanish, so you don't. Your Canadian prejudice doesn't have to come into play. It's Spanish, and it was never released in the U.S. It might not even be on video. So you might be out of luck. You'll just have to watch Quarantine again.
Ugh. Stuff not released here is usually the stamp of quality.
That's
a tagline for a movie that has been made.
Next week, Dingus, next week, what is our topic?
I think we should review The Crystal Skull.
Does The Fourth Kind come out next week?
Oh, God, I don't know. Is that a found footage movie?
It's pretending to be.
Oh. You know, I want to go back to that. I know we're not allowed to at this point, but that found footage thing, I'm not sure about that label. Moving beyond that, do any of us have any intention of watching the Wild Things movie?
Well, that's what we'll be doing. That's what we'll be discussing next week. Where the Wild Things Are, directed by Spike Jonze, written by David Eggers, starring some kid.
Good. Max Records.
Yeah, because I'm not talking about that other Wild Things movie, but I'm definitely talking about that.
Do you guys...
Oh, and Nev Campbell. We'll do a double feature.
Yeah. We'll do a threesome. Get it?
Let's do that movie.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, next week, join us on the 2:45 movie podcast for a discussion of Where the Wild Things Are. This gives you a week to see it because we will be discussing it. There will be spoilers, just so you know. Thanks for listening. This has been Tom. So, okay, since we're just starting out, we'll all sign off. We'll go in alphabetical order, so I'll start, and then we'll go in alphabetical order. So I'll sign off, and then Dingus, you sign off, and then Kelly, you sign off, and then that'll be the end of the podcast, and I'll bring the music up while we're doing it. So this will be awesome. So hold on. Let's you guys talk amongst yourselves while I set this up. All right.
So,
well done, Kelly. Well done for talking amongst yourselves. So thank you for joining us. This has been Tom Chick. We also have
Christian Murawski.
Kelly Wand.
Hey!
Sorry. Was that it?
Was that Frank Black?
To meet you.
I thought there was going to be music. Tom?
I think
Tom's doing stuff.
Hey,
if that came out at all, I'll take Tom on. That's how we
Was that the Pixies at the end?
Can you not hear it now?
Is Tom here?
No, it's just you and me.
I only
you guys not hear that?
You got
Did you not hear that?
No, I just heard. I just heard the hey. It sounded like hey.
It
sounded like that Pixies song.
I was playing that.
I thought
song
it was the Pogues.
I guess it didn't record.
Oh, all right.
I get those.